are Natalie and Matthias. We welcome you to our conversations with B2B ecosystem experts and platform founders. Our goal is to uncover what they learned and help you to launch and scale platforms, marketplaces, and business ecosystems. Enjoy! Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new show of our podcast, Platforms for Future. And today we talk to a special guest, Hendrik Hahn. He is CDO of Evonik Industries. And today we will talk not about only how they are running a platform, how they scale the platform, but we will also do a lessons learned on what they learned from executing this platform. But also they realized that the platform itself, the business went not so well as they maybe thought it should be. So they closed it some months ago. And we will talk with Hendrik about this kind of decision. And because this decision is also very special for a very traditional German company, Evonik. So why they closed the platform, what they have learned. So I think this is a very special episode. And I'm also very, very happy to have my lovely co-host with me, Natalie. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Matthias.
And of course, hello, Henrik. Welcome to our show.
Hello.
I would say, to not boring our listeners, let's go straight into conversation. So, Henrik, maybe you can explain a little bit more about who you are, what you are doing at Evonik, and also, of course, give a little bit more context. What is Evonik and how you started your journey with the platform economics and Want2Chem?
Sure. So my friends and colleagues would say enthusiastic, curious, and maybe a little bit of a nerd. So I'm more than 20 years with Evonik and predecessor companies. And for the last 5 years, I've been leading our corporate digitalization strategy and serve as the group's chief digital officer. Basically, I've always worked at the interface between technology and innovation on the one hand and strategic business development on the other hand. And today's topic is also sort of strategic business development. One of my most exciting assignments, though, was for sure the responsibility for a corporate high-tech startup in the electric mobility space, which unfortunately failed. So hopefully failure is not my track record. By education, I'm a process engineer and a rheologist, and I also hold a degree in business administration with a specialization in information economics and mathematical game theory. My motto is learning and believing is seeing.
Yeah, this sounds very, very good. Also, one of our famous quotes is like, you will 100% miss your shots you don't take. So learning is always part of the journey. And I think the biggest learnings you can always draw off maybe the things maybe went not as expected or as planned. So it's great to have you here in our show and talk with you also about the learning. So you initiated your platform, Want2Chem, about 3 years ago, 2017, as an internal initiative. So maybe you can give a bit more kind of a context, what you have, what was this initiative about? What was the reason behind the narrative behind Evonik to go into this platform business?
So maybe talking about context, I also would like to introduce a little bit what is Evonik and who is Evonik. So we're one of the world's leading specialty chemical companies, active in more than 100 countries around the world. And our more than 7,000 products make, for example, tires fuel efficient, mattresses more elastic, medications more effective, and animal feeds healthier. Just mention a few examples of what specialty chemicals are all about. And while we often contribute only small amounts of material, those contributions really make the difference. And lipids for messenger RNA-based vaccines are just a very recent example. And also, even though I gave up chemistry at school, I have to really also tell your audience, the world without chemistry would really be dull, dark, and simply disastrous. So no iPhone, no LED lighting, no almost everything, including this podcast and also including any type of platform. And so basically everything in our daily life is centered around chemistry from the food we eat to personal healthcare to mobility. And in essence, the chemical industry is the industry of the industries. And you could say we make stuff for stuff. And therefore, it might be also really a good idea to think about how could we not just bring forward what we make, but also the way how we deliver our products to our customers. And that was more or less the starting point of our platform activities. So with OntoChem, we wanted to provide a novel multi-sided e-commerce platform for the chemical industry. And we decided to clearly position it as a neutral offering open to third parties. And one reason to start an own development stemmed actually from legal considerations. That back then, around the year 2017, antitrust and trade compliance topics seem to be really hard to control if you rely on third-party services. And so that the idea was born when there is no such thing available on the market, we have to do it ourselves.
And so you're saying that obviously you had in mind a multi-sided platform, but I assume this means that you saw some problems or inefficiencies in the supply chain. Can you give a bit more details on why a marketplace?
Yes, so you mean what is the core problem the platform addressed? And it's simple, matchmaking. So the platform has developed to address the needs and challenges indeed of suppliers and buyers, and in particular associated with short-term transactions. So within our industry, typically everything goes long-term, but there is also the need for this so-called spot business, and that was actually what the platform has been centered around. And the technical solution we did pursue tendered a one-to-one communication between suppliers and buyers, and all users, they could decide for themselves specifically with whom they want to get in touch. So suppliers and buyers had to activate each other's in order to exchange specific offers and prices and specific demands. And so actually, you're absolutely right. This is in the context of supply chain management.
So was this complementary to the or an extension of the existing business? Because you're talking about spot business, does that mean that Evonik typically is doing more business in the longer with longer term transactions, and this was addressing kind of an extension or an acceleration of a niche market for you?
Yeah, indeed, it's complementing. You could say it's a complementing channel. And indeed, this is not just a topic for us, being a specialty chemicals company, but it is, and as we saw it back then, it turned out that this is really a topic which is very relevant to the entire industry. And in particular, and perhaps we can also dwell on the journey we took. It was one of our business lines that was really looking for an efficient way to market production surplus volumes. And the surplus of product volume is in fact a nuisance for our sales colleagues, that they must contact individual companies and basically through classic channels such as email, telephone, simply to try to find an interested party. And this is, as you can imagine, both tedious and time-consuming.
So the main reason is about also sales, bring in more efficiency into the sales process and look at this available chemicals in the stock you have. And so it takes a lot of effort to sell it. Maybe you can take us on the journey of OntoChem. So as mentioned, you started 3 years ago. So maybe you can describe two, three major milestones you went through on your journey.
Yeah, as I try to line out this specific situation in one of our business, the answer we came up with was to build what we back then called ChemEasy, a simple web page that comparable to a petrol station signals, let's say, drive-by availability and price information. So what did we observe? Well, our business could observe customer behavior. In our standard systems, it's only document which customer bought when and what price. Frankly, we do not really have that much of data. So we usually do not know if a customer called us in the past and we could not serve, or if our pricing was simply unattractive. And however, we could see who looked up now this web page and thus had a demand, obviously, and what pricing was not attractive to them. That was the idea. And as a result, the business actually sold a high volume at high price, and even to customers they had not on the radar screen before. And exactly this was the starting point to what I call our entrepreneurial journey. So that was the first milestone. And we believed back then that we might have identified a true pain point, not just within Evonik, but in the entire industry, a niche that was not actively managed by suppliers, where there was maybe some room and willingness to experiment. And so we attempted to maximize our return on luck. So we pivoted Chemeasy to serve more than one supplier. And when we discussed this with Evonik colleagues, those we caused quite a turmoil. The mere thought of other suppliers using the exact same channel as themselves to possibly reach out to the same customer in the end was and still is quite discomforting. And the disclosure of actual prices, that's the true beauty of this petrol station web page approach, that renders further communication to place an order that caused really a lot of concern, I can tell you. And in first instance, we rebranded our idea. And that was the second important milestone. One to Chem was born. And thanks actually to the wife of our product owner, who saved us from longer name discussions. And then the journey really pivoted, and we further developed the idea of setting up this multi-sided platform, branded in a neutral way, also attracting other parties rather than our internal business.
So from I've picked some words along what you've been saying so far that are underlying, I think, a lot the story is the whole topic of trust. You mentioned the regulations, the antitrust rules, etc., but also the change of name to become more neutral. I guess the transactions have to be secured. Also, the perception of opening the platform to other people or using other people's platform, etc. How did you? I mean, did you have a holistic approach to trust, or did you address it as and when you saw like operational problems or marketing problems or regulation problems? How did that did you handle this?
So the trust topic was, in our view, the enabler for any kind of such a digital solution, and we also perceived that within our industry there is this concern to lose control. So we tried to find a technical setting that was 100% secure in terms of that only those parties interact that decided to interact. So it was not an open place. It was really, let's say, a dedicated decision from one party and the other party to interact, exchange information, and basically prepare a transaction. Because the transactional part that was carried out outside the platform, so the platform had basically no real back-end integration into the ERP system, but everything that is needed to place an order and to also process an order, these information, they were provided in terms of matchmaking to the transaction parties.
Okay. So it sounds like a bit like a dating platform. So you helped people finding each other and started the conversations, exchange informations and help them to come together. And the matchmaking is always a very, very important part in running a platform. So what was the business model behind Want2Chem? So did you took a kind of a transaction fee or how you monetized the platform?
That's the holy grail of all platform approaches, in particular in B2B. What is it where you can make money with? And to what people typically think you just get what from the platform provider perspective seems to be a minute share of the transaction volume is typically, if you're sitting in the shoes of the customer, the buyer and the supplier, simply something you're not really willing to give away. So we were basically thinking about more a subscription model plus additional services. Additional services for example, cover the trade compliance check, which is something which is really a must in our industry, and everything that helps to accelerate the trade compliance check process, that is actually represents a value. And so we were thinking about a subscription-based model plus charging additional services, but not that in form of commission fees or something.
Yeah, this kind of pattern is something we also discovered when we also did a study with, we looked at over 400 B2B platforms in Europe and also analyzed how they monetize. And this is also what we saw, that about 80% or so really a big number of platforms monetize via value-adding services. So of course, transaction fees or subscription models, but always in addition to value-adding services, because it seems like that this is a major pattern in B2B business or B2B platform businesses, that you always need to add some additional values.
And the ultimate value is depending on also the network effects that can be realized, is to provide market insights as well as to the supply side, as well as to the demand side. So that was the ultimate goal. Having achieved sufficient traction on the platform, this would then also allow us to provide metadata on certain specific products and the specific supply and demand situation. And this piece of information is obviously very interesting to both parties.
And from an organizational point of view, you mentioned it started inside Evonik and it was more entrepreneurship. How did that evolve? Did you spin out the startup? Did you recruit people or did you continue with the core internal team?
Yeah, gladly enough, we just also set up our dedicated digital unit, the Evonik Digital GmbH. And so that was basically a kind of startup environment where we had, first of all, also a certain freedom to operate outside the rather strict and sticky conventional business processes, for example, also embracing IT solutions out of the ordinary. So this was obviously a cloud platform approach, and that was also due to neutrality hosted by a third party. And so these ideas to even think about to host services within a third party environment, that was something where our digital GmbH environment was very helpful, and is very hard to manage within the core business, obviously, because within the core business you also have to protect the core. By this I mean everything around the ERP system, and here we have this startup spirit, but also organizational freedom to try out, iterate, and follow what is also a pragmatic approach.
And coming back to the journey, so one of the last milestones, let's say this way, was that you also made a decision to close One2Chem. Maybe can you also give us some more background behind the decision and when it was and so on?
Yeah, so the in the end, you may also ask what went not so well. And at the end of the day, it was the traction. And by this, I mean the overall adoption of the platform, both internally, so for our own businesses, as well as externally. And I have to say, apparently, the industry was simply not ready yet. And so we tried out for 2 to 3 years. And even, I would say, in the year 2021, e-commerce in the chemical industry is still at a stage of infancy with a limited penetration, and actually regardless in which region of the world you are. And so in particular, the willingness to try out also other, in the meantime, established competitive offers like Chemondis from Germany or Node from the US seems to really evolving at slow pace. And this is very much, in my view, similar to a situation when other industries decades ago picked up EDI, whereas within our industry, we were really questioning a long time the obvious benefits of the automation of transactional processes via EDI. And so lack of traction, plus the fact that the competitive offers have been emerging, obviously very well financially backed, these were the main reasons. And last but not least, and this is, let's say, the good news along with this, we had the opportunity to partner up with Cambit. And Cambit is a startup based in Oldenburg in Germany. And the colleagues, they developed the largest meter search engine for the chemical industry. And so we found a way to figuratively integrate the matching idea of One2Chem into the Cambit approach.
Dear listeners, I hope you enjoy our podcast and you can learn more about building and scaling a successful platform business. I'm Matthias, CEO of Fastbreak One. And as you know, we at Fastbreak One are platform entrepreneurs by heart. Since over 20 years, we are building new platforms, and this makes us one of the most experienced platform venture builders around the globe. If you are a corporate and you tried out different strategies, consultants, IT partners, but your platform initiative struggles to scale, please check out our assessment services. Learn more about our experience and our practices of work at our website www.fastbreak.one, or send us an email to contact@fastbreak.one. And now let's go back to the conversation.
So just when you're saying that the industry was not ready, if I understood correctly, it was not so much not wanting to use a new vehicle, digital vehicle, but more a barrier in terms of culture of trying out other vendors or other sources of products. Is that correct?
Yeah, of course, you can always ask what is now really the story behind the story. And here we have to be clear about that we have established processes. We have established sales channels within the entire industry. So I'm not just talking about ourselves. And so you bring in a new idea within an industry network that obviously arranged itself in the way the business is carried out. And so here the challenge is to convince people that it is worth to also try out what I call a complementing channel approach in parallel, on top of the daily business. So sometimes people were telling us we were so busy by reaching out to people by phone and fax that we cannot try out your platform, which is obviously a strange reaction, but it's a human reaction.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's that's the whole point of the platform. But in the, I think, as you're saying, this human, a very strong human factor also, like when you have to use whatever new product, it's not just for platforms. I think there's a lapse of time where you have to adapt. Right? Sometimes shorter, sometimes longer, but it's like when you get your new smartphone, right? You might know how to use a smartphone, but you still have to adapt a little bit to what it does. And I think with platforms, it's the same thing. And that's why we also often insist on the fact that the onboarding has got to be as simple and smooth and easy as possible on platforms, which obviously is much easier on B2C platforms than B2B platforms, especially when yes. They are regulated like yours.
Yeah, it's not just the regulatory components obviously also matter, but it's also I call the back end integration issues. And so one could say the problem a platform can solve in our tree industry is not that obvious, actually. And so the established processes, as I try to explain, and the what I call best practices in quotation marks, they are rather sticky.
Yeah, what we also learn, and when we look at platforms, is that it takes about 5 years for platforms, so in average, to become very profitable. So really to see that this hockey stick effect kicks in, that it really becomes profitable, network effects will show up and so on. And until the 5 years mark, it's not only about developing technology, capabilities, whatever, it's also about fighting against competitors, really establishing yourself in the market. Especially in those old industries like B2B, you have to take care of the business of the users. You have to onboard them and so on. So it's a long journey, but after 5 years, it will show that a platform really brings a huge benefit. So looking at your journey with about a time span of about 3 years, would you say you've been a little bit too impatient or not patient enough to maybe hold on for 2-3 more years? I'm sure you also discussed it within your board.
Absolutely. And so first of all, we come from a world where we typically rely on classic, what I call classic management approaches. So that is that we set ourselves a specific goal, calculate the expected return for different scenarios, evaluate all possible risk, and based on this, carefully single out the perfect strategy and also the strategic partners to set out the most efficient path for such an endeavor. You may wonder whether we follow this classic management approach with one to Chem. And I have to say, in reality, it was really quite different. So as I try to explain, a marketplace approach in our industry, in particular when we set out with our development back then was rather rare to begin with. And needless to say, we, Evonik, had yet ever developed such an offering. So if you want to act on such an idea that is associated with a great deal of uncertainty, in my view, you are well advised to focus on who you are, what you know, and whom you know. In other words, start with what you have, with the means, imagine possibilities, and then take action. But you have to be also clear about how you can change your thinking from what are we doing to what is the impact. And yes, you can say it typically takes 5 years. If you ask me, I would even say it takes more than 5 years, more takes 7 years, even in the B2C space sometimes. And we, for example, we used objectives and key results, the objectives and key results framework to closely follow. And we simply did not experience this trigger point gave us the confidence that further patience can be justified. So we were also following an approach where we were very clear about the affordable loss. So what are we willing to invest on our own behalf, and do we come to the conclusion that also taking into account that in the meantime, competitive offerings have been established, and there is a point where you simply have to say we should really reiterate, really re-pivot the entire approach like we did with Cambit. And in parallel, we also thought we are not willing to stay unprofitable for such a long period of time. So we said there are other offerings outside, and we don't really have to invent everything on our own behalf. So here, that was the decision that has been taken. And the future will tell us whether we were too impatient or whether it was exactly the right strategic decision to refocus on what you can achieve over time.
I'm wondering, of course, you don't have a crystal ball, we don't either, but do you think that if instead of maybe building the platform by yourselves initially, you had partnered with, I don't know, two or three other chemical industries or maybe even competitors, but more as an ecosystem approach, do you think that could have changed things, or, you know, just I guess, but, you know, what's your feeling?
I can tell you a secret that was ever my idea to transform our ecosystem approach. And it was not really just by chance that we decided to go for a neutral branding. So it was from the very start the idea to bring in other, even competitors, to form a consortium with other companies within our space, because I also expected that we will have this traction issue. And so indeed, we tried to partner up with our other chemical companies. But in the end, we could not manage to come to an agreement about also the strategy and many aspects along with this. What is the right fulfillment strategy? What is the right monetization strategy? And so, unfortunately, we were not successful in putting together sustainable consortium. But the idea was there from the very start. And on top of this idea, I also ever thought that to grow the platform and get out of the dilemma that growth goes against profitability, was also thinking about venture capital injections. And but we did not manage to get to this point. But that was part of the strategic approach to partner up with other peers and ultimately also to foster the platform development in terms of financial resources to also tap in venture capital. But we never came to this point, unfortunately.
So I uncovered a secret.
But the secret is also that you are not alone with your thinking. So other platforms and other companies, and also, for example, the other famous example of XOM Materials and so on. They are going through the same learning journey. So establishing a platform in a B2B environment, there's always those kind of strategic components to it. What is the implication to the market and to the competitive landscape and so on? So also your customers are then telling, maybe I have a look one time at your platform, but I don't really use it all the time because maybe it gives you too many insights. So whatever, so they kind of block it. And so it should be always a kind of a good approach and should be part of your platform strategy to partner with other competitors and other market players. Yeah,
and also one other aspect is in the end, a platform only will survive when there is enough supply. And we also, within these 2 to 3 years, faced periods of time when we have simply been within the industry in a kind of allocation mode. So there was basically no product left that could be traded via other channels, because the classic channels, be it long-term contracts, be it distributor agreements, they were basically consuming the entire supply. Then also the platform runs out dry, and that was also a reason that I thought we have to really be open from the very beginning. And the more partners we can not just attract but also bring in also for strategic realignments and further strategic developments, the better. But here we had to also simply state that I would say the starting point within the industries were rather distributed. So we had our own development, and I also am happy to share what it really means, our own development, because here also one the recipe of success, even though at the end it's not successful, was to partner up with the right partners that can help you also to foster the software development, for example. So there were many, I would say, different views on many topics that make up a platform. And then we had to say, okay, it's not, we cannot achieve this joint view on the entire topic. So I keep my fingers crossed for the competitive offers that are in the market. I mentioned Chemondis and Node. These are, in my view, really some promising candidates, but I'm pretty sure they, in a way, are also facing the same experience like we did.
And and as you said, the starting point or the reason why you started this platform, so kind of getting rid of overstock material, went away, this problem, because the market changed, the demand changed, the supply side changed. So the original reason changed. But coming back to your point about traditional management, I sense a bit that you also maybe it's still part of your journey to bring in a kind of a new learning culture into a very traditional company like Evonik. And I can imagine it's very traditional, very classic approach. As you said, you set your milestones, you set your roadmap and so on. And then very often what we also see is that in those traditional management companies is that they don't really want to tell people, maybe our plan was not right. So they fear a bit of telling people, hey, we failed. So I think what you bring forward into this traditional company is a kind of a learning culture to say, yes, we try out things. And this is always part of digital companies, this kind of a startup DNA. We bring this to this classic company where we try out things. Of course, we set KPIs, we measure KPIs, and we have some specific goals. But if it does not really turn out as we thought of, hey, we close and we take the learnings with us. And maybe in some years we can reopen up, change a bit and so on. But it's not really a failure. It's more like we have to establish this kind of learning culture. So is this something what you would say this is maybe one of the biggest achievements of the of your journey? Or
Actually, so the reason that I'm happily sharing what we learned, I think there have been really many, many achievements. This culture of learning and also this startup spirit inside a company like Evonik, that is clearly a big plus. And in addition, this entire exercise that was representing what I call necessary groundwork in order to develop also a better understanding which role platforms can and will play in our ecosystems. And we could also pave the way for the future of the entire marketing and sales experience, because what we have not mentioned so far is also everything around customer journeys, digital customer experience. And this is something you cannot just run in PowerPoint exercises. Here, this was, we were on the market. We had a go-to-market. We had a go-to-market approach. And in fact, we were successfully also transferring our learnings to other platform approaches within Evonik, for example, in the area of precision livestock farming. So we are a producer of feed solutions for animal nutrition. And in this regard, we are also bringing together animal health and health and nutrition and farm management considerations also in form of a platform approach. And we could really, starting off with the branding, starting off also with the software technology and what it means to also develop according to agile methodologies and applying Scrum principle and so on and so forth. So what we invested in terms of personal resources, but also in terms of services we sourced in from third parties, it was worth every single euro. So even the outcome may be a little bit disappointing from the starting point perspective, but in the end, it was a big success in terms of organizational learning. And so if you ask what went well, the learning of new skills, as you say, we practice agile working methods. We rotated our team to leverage also our collective experience from other e-commerce activities. We had, at that point in time, also, for example, operated a B2C shop, or we set up a digital customer experience program for the entire Evonik group. And we also reinforced our team wherever we had the chance with young colleagues from internal trainee programs and also with interns. And so in the end, we really delved into digital marketing and accustomed, for example, also with analytics tools and everything around it.
Yeah, and I like your point you mentioned at the beginning. So to say, this is necessary groundwork for every company to do this and to explore platform opportunities. And it's maybe not only one. So you are a big company, so there are plenty of opportunities. And then also transferring the learnings from one opportunity to the other one. This is really, really important. So coming to maybe to an end, looking at the time of our conversation. So you are also an executive and experienced What would be maybe an advice or a learning you would like to give other executive, other companies who are also thinking about approaching a platform strategy?
That's a good question. And I'm glad that you asked me before the recording to think about the question. So I would say it's absolutely okay to be misunderstood for a while, but never underestimate the resistance to change, even if you have a good idea. So do you recall, for example, Steve Ballmer, the back then Microsoft CEO, saying in 2007, that was basically, by the way, the foundation year of Evonik, and he said, there is no chance that the iPhone is going to get any significant market share. So ultimately, change is stressful and people avoid it because they want to avoid pain, frustration, and also lack of confidence that goes along with it. And that would be my advice. You have to embrace change, but not just for yourself, but you have to also find a way for a proper change management if you try to set up something like a platform approach.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I also like a quote here about sports. As you know, we are sports fans, so you can't win a game sitting on the sideline. So you always have to go in and play and give your best and try things out. So and without trying, you can't win. So it was really a pleasure to listen to you. And we also can all recommend to our listeners our assessment. So we have developed also a platform assessment for companies who are running a platform business and want to check different perspectives to understand if you are on the right track, what can we improve and so on in a structured and systematic way. So totally recommend this. And yeah, Henrik, very big thank you for being so open and give us your lessons learned. And Natalie, you also have...
Yes, I wanted to also thank Henrik very much because when we discussed doing this recording, I was actually very excited because for once we were not, you know, going to talk about what went wrong. And this is quite unusual and we should be talking about these things a lot more because it's, as you said, absolutely worth every step, every penny you put in it because you're learning so much. I guess maybe in Europe we don't have as much that culture I can talk for France at least. We associate failure with failure and not with learning. And I think this is really a shift we have to take. So I was really excited about this. And thank you very much for being so open with us and sharing for sharing all those views.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. And I very much enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you very much. And we are also looking forward to see more platforms come born out of Evonik.
Yes.
Now we put our energy into supporting our colleagues within the Cambit startup. So you can expect more from us.
Great.
And thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Stay safe and sound. And thank you so much for the opportunity to share some learnings.
This podcast is brought to you by Fastbreak One, your platform venture builder. If you want to learn more about our services and how we help corporations to launch and scale platforms, please visit our website www.fastbreak.one. And don't forget to tune in 2 weeks for a new episode.